Hello, this is Mark Peacock, and welcome to the Travel Commons Podcast. This is Travel Commons Podcast number 71, recorded Sunday, February 8th, 2009. This is the podcast giving the voice of the traveler. It's more about the journey than the destination. Two topics on this edition of the Travel Commons Podcast, looking back at last year's travel and flying the tatty skies of United. Hey, this week coming to you again from the Travel Commons studios outside of Chicago, Illinois, back doing my thing to support the travel industry. I'll tell you, since January 1st, I've been in Philadelphia, Washington, D.C., Denver, Phoenix, and San Francisco, a couple of those multiple times. This past week, I was in Stamford, Connecticut, back down to D.C., and ending the week in lovely, scenic Jackson, Michigan, home to a quaint state prison, which has led the state to put signs along the stretch of I-94 passing through Jackson, warning drivers not to pick up hitchhikers. Just a reminder that you do occasionally have to pay your travel dues. Now, you know, not to say, though, that there hasn't been some bright spots in my travel escapade since the last time we've gotten together. The snow is piled pretty deep here in Chicago, and I don't know, it just keeps coming down. I woke up Wednesday morning the week before last to yet another 2 inches of new snow. But it didn't bother me too much because I was heading for Phoenix. 4 hours at 35,000 feet in what has been really the most crowded flight of the year. And I passed from 15 degrees in Arctic snowdrifts to bright blue skies and 70 degrees surrounded by guys with golf bags heading for the rental car bus. The week before that, though, I embraced the snow after being locked in a conference room in Denver for 3 days with a beautiful view of the Rockies. A colleague and I blew up I-70 to Breckenridge for a day of skiing. It was great. No lift lines, phenomenal snow. It was great right up until a five-car pileup closed I-70 for an hour. We stood outside our cars, stamped our feet in the snow, asking cars driving up the other side how bad it looked, watching the minutes tick away, and with them, our chances for making our 7 p.m. flights. I was lucky. Flying Interhub on United between Denver and Chicago, I had one more shot, a 9:30 flight that I made, you know, with time to spare for one last fat tire beer. My colleague, however, was less fortunate. He was flying American to Dallas, and with the flight cutbacks from fuel prices and sort of the free-falling economy, the 7 p.m. flight was the last one of the evening for him. So when the traffic finally got moving, I made for the airport bar and he made for a hotel bar. You know, on all of these flights, which have been post the U.S. Air landing in the Hudson River, I've noticed people paying a lot more attention to the safety briefings. I kind of wonder how long that will last. Following up, hey, a belated shout-out to Tim Grubb, who linked to Travel Commons from his The Size of Life blog. Tim says, I've spent my entire life struggling with being larger than the average man. At 6'4" tall and just over 300 pounds, I've learned a lot of life's toughest lessons about the advantages and disadvantages of being larger than life. Tim is writing a multi-part series on flying the big and tall friendly skies with tips on choosing the right plane and how to use seatguru.com to find the best seats. And it's appropriate that the Seat Guru map that Tim uses to illustrate his article has the cursor hovering over what I think is the best coach seat in the domestic U.S. fleet, the window seat on the second exit row of a United Airbus 319. There's no seat in front of you because the emergency exit door, so a big and tall guy, it's much better than first class. You know, stretch those legs out all the way, and nobody in front of you is bashing your knees with a reclining seat back. And unlike a bulkhead, you still have storage space under the seat that's now two rows in front of you. I'll tell you, give me a free drink coupon, and I'll take that seat over first class every time. I haven't talked about the TSA recently, the Transportation Safety Administration, or as some people would call it, TWIT standing around, because, you know, I guess there hasn't been much new to talk about. I mean, no forced nipple ring removals, no reported luggage thefts. Now, while the TSA experience is still a beatdown, things seem, they seem to have leveled out. I mean, it's been a while since I've heard, you know, a TSA screener screaming out at the top of their voices, take off your shoes, take your laptop out. And, you know, I can't remember the last time someone pulled me over to search my toiletry kit because of my tooth powder. One very positive thing that the TSA has done recently is completely reconfigure the security setup at Philadelphia airports, you know, the slum terminals, the non-U.S. air terminals, terminals D and E. I mean, for years, the security lines there have been just sort of dank and brutal, some sort of like medieval maze thing, kind of similar to the Newark airport setup where they've buried the screening stations in the concourse hallway, in the terminal hallway, limiting the number of screening stations to two or three and just causing horrendous backups. You know, back in October, I tweeted, I got to stop here. You know, there's got to be a better verb construction for sending a Twitter message. But, you know, back in October, when I sent a Twitter message that I would never fly Southwest out of Philadelphia again because of the 30-minute TSA backup in Terminal E, up from the cattle pen lines, halfway across the pedestrian bridge to the parking deck. I mean, compared to that, the new security setup is a thing of beauty. A dozen or so screening stations, though only half seem to be manned at any single point in time. High ceilings, windows, I mean, even the TSA screeners seem more pleasant. I mean, tough to get too excited about a screening station. And by the way, there still is no separate lane for premium status flyers. But at least I don't cringe now, or at least quite as much, when I think about flying out of Philadelphia. However, the TSA still seems intent upon avoiding common sense at all costs, especially taxpayer costs, by continuing to do pat-down searches on people who are obviously not security threats. The most recent example was on my flight out to Phoenix. You know, coming through security at O'Hare, I see the TSA giving a full pat-down to Cardinal Francis George, the 72-year-old Catholic Archbishop of Chicago, a recent cancer survivor, and a guy who still walks with a limp from a childhood bout with polio. I mean, the TSA guy was pleasant enough, and he recognized Cardinal George, and Cardinal George wasn't giving the guy a hard time, but, I mean, come on. I mean, enough with the "we treat everyone exactly the same." I mean, not everyone is the same level of threat. Treat them differently. Yes, discriminate, but for obviously apparent reasons. I mean, a 72-year-old Catholic archbishop isn't going to take a plane down. Focus on the guys behind him who much better match the threat profile. Hey, in the past few episodes, we've shared some listener stories on playing travel roulette, taking chances, changing flight plans to avoid delays. I spun that wheel and dropped the marble earlier this week. Tuesday morning, I was in Connecticut with plans to head down to Washington, D.C. that evening. And as the snow kept falling and falling and falling harder, I decided to lay that bet down and move from the plane to the train, from the shuttle out of LaGuardia to the Amtrak Acela out of Stamford Station, you know, a quarter mile away. Made a lot of sense, avoid the traffic down I-95 and the mess that is LaGuardia even on the best of days. And as I've mentioned in prior episodes, I've gotten to like taking the train. I hoped a couple of $1 million earmarked for Amtrak and high-speed rail in Obama's stimulus plan manages to survive the sausage-making known as the congressional legislative process. Well, anyhow, things started off nicely. The 6 p.m. Acela Express arrived at the platform on time. I walked into the quiet car, plugged in my laptop and my iPod, and started working. About 15 minutes down the track, though, all of a sudden our train glided to a stop. We all looked at each other and then out the window. Eventually, conductor came on the PA and told us that a ground in the wire had caused the train to lose power and that there was more damage up ahead, so we needed to switch over to the other track, which meant we were going to have to go back. We were going to have to back up for about 5 minutes to get to the track switch. But since it was rush hour, it was going to take a little bit until we got clearance from the control center. I got up, walked back to the club car, and bought a beer. We eventually got into New York's Penn Station, an hour and 45 minutes late. South of Newark, it happened again. The engines go quiet and we glide to a stop. There was a loud collective sigh of exasperation now as we wait to hear from the conductor. It's not the wires this time, it's the wheels. Apparently, snow buildup in the wheel wells triggered the train's dragging sensors. That's what they called them, dragging sensors. You know, the train thinks it's dragging equipment or a body, maybe, I don't know, and so cuts power. The conductors then have to go out and do a manual inspection. I got up, I walked back to the club car, and I bought another beer. This kept happening the whole way down to DC, both the dragging sensor tripping and me getting up to the club car. And instead of getting to Union Station at 9:50 p.m., we sort of drug in at 12:45 a.m., which is after the subway, the metro system closed. They close at midnight, which meant waiting in a long, cold line for a cab. I'll tell you, I spun the roulette wheel and that marble landed in zero, which meant nobody won. So if you've got a story about winning, hopefully, or losing, or a question, or a comment, the voice of the traveler, send it along. The email address is comment, C-O-M-M-E-N-T-S, at travelcommons.com, or you can post them on the website at travelcommons.com. The first topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is looking back at last year's travel. A couple of weeks ago, Doppler, the travel website that in that no longer cute web.20 way drops the last vowel, so it's spelled Doppler.com. Hey guys, you know, here's $50. Go buy the E. Well, anyhow, they assembled a one-page personal annual report for their subscribers' 2008 travel. I shouldn't say subscribers, really users. The service is free. It used to be you had to be invited, and so somebody sent me an invite. I don't know if you still need to be invited. You know what? If you guys want to try it out, if you need an invite, send me an email at comments at travelcommons.com, and I'll send you an invite if you still need one. Anyhow. So they assembled this one-page personal annual report, and I'll tell you, it's a really good-looking summary. I mean, they've done really some nice design work. It's a one-pager. The factoids they sprinkle throughout the page are fun. My report starts out with, you took 58 trips in 2008, which added up to 191,433 kilometers, or 52% of the distance to the moon. This was followed by another interesting note. Your personal velocity for 2008 was 21.84 kilometers an hour, which is about the same as a squirrel. Now, I'm not quite sure of the usefulness of either of those facts, but it made for some good icebreakers at business meetings. You know, when you're sitting around some random hotel conference room with a bunch of people you don't know, and some cheery project manager slash meeting facilitator perks up at 7:30 in the morning with, I have a fun little icebreaker so that we can all get to know one another. Everyone, turn to the person on your right and share with them a little known fact about yourself. Saying that I have the same personal velocity as a squirrel definitely breaks the ice in some interesting ways. Now, I've talked in the past about Doppler's carbon calculator, and while it's not perfect, though since their April 08 launch, they've improved the functionality and addressed some of the shortcomings I discussed in prior episodes. You know, the carbon calculator, like I said, it's not perfect, but it gives you data that's probably directionally correct, and so causes you to at least stop and think about the carbon footprint of each trip. Doppler's calculation of my carbon for 2008, 23.2 metric tons of carbon dioxide, of CO2, or as they so nicely illustrate it, the equivalent of 2.3 Hummer H3s. Of course, they could have used, say, a Mercedes-Benz S600 sedan, which actually gets worse mileage than a Hummer H3, but I guess chest-pounding about big gas-guzzling American SUVs is easier than self-awareness about big gas-guzzling Euro sedans, especially when your company is based in Helsinki. Well, you know what, though? I'll tell you, the most interesting factoid on the page was this one. In 2008, you spent 214 days at home, 152 days traveling. I spent 41% of 2008 away from home. My wife mentioned this statistic at a dinner she had with some friends, and the reaction was one of complete shock. "Oh my God," they said, "half the time you're a single mother." I got to tell you, I was kind of surprised by that number too. But then, you know, I set my Outlook calendar to monthly view and started to page back through the year, and I could see the travel days add up. And unlike the carbon footprint factoid, though, the days traveling number hasn't caused me to change my ways. A couple of friends asked me on separate occasions, "When are you going to slow down?" My answer to each of them was the same, some combination of "I don't know" and "not yet." And given the state of the economy and its impact on my personal portfolio, I don't think I can afford to slow down. I don't know anyone who can. I'll bet my personal velocity this year is going to be actually a bit faster than a squirrel. The second topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is flying the tatty skies of United. You know, everything seemed fine for this flight from O'Hare to Phoenix 2 weeks back that I've mentioned a couple of times now. Yes, the plane was a repainted TED plane. United's a boarded, low-cost brand, so there was no first class. But I did get that exit row seat, the window that I was talking about, so, I mean, it wasn't so bad. Everyone boarded quickly. We were ready to get out of the Chicago snow. The flight attendants were doing their aisle walkthroughs, up and back, when one of them noticed something was wrong with the luggage bin over across from me. The hinge had broken, maybe, I don't know, from somebody trying to cram in an oversized bag, or maybe it just gave up from old age. The flight attendants pulled out the bags, patted the doors a couple of times, and tried to pronounce it okay so we could have an on-time departure. The captain came back to take a look, shook his head, and called maintenance. He didn't want to risk having it pop open during flight. The plane just let out a groan. We could see at least a 30-minute delay. But the maintenance guy came on board pretty quick. He walked down the aisle, looked at the broken hinge, closed the door a couple of times. Then he pulled a roll of duct tape off his belt and taped the bin shut. He panned the door a couple of times and walked off to fill out the paperwork. We were maybe 10 minutes late leaving the ground. Check out the show notes for the URL of the picture I took with my iPhone of this fine repair job. I'll tell you, those of us who spend a good bit of time flying United know that it's fraying around the edges. Duct tape is not an uncommon sight, be it keeping broken luggage bins closed or holding broken armrests together. It's not unusual to walk down the plane aisle past a seat marked non-operable or to sit in a seat that keeps reclining, that can't stay upright. You know, it's a far fall for United. Way back when, they were the launch airline for the Boeing 777. I remember the PBS documentary about that joint effort, that the joint design effort on how United and Boeing engineers worked together to spec the plane out so that it hit the weight targets. Today, United is the only major U.S. airline to not have any current orders placed with any aircraft manufacturer. I would guess that United flyers, such as myself, are going to be seeing more duct tape in the coming years. And of course, the service has gotten a bit frayed around the edges too. The 2008 American Customer Satisfaction Index has United ahead of only U.S. Airways. Now that's damning with faint praise. And the United guys seem to know it. Brett Snyder, one of my fellow boarding area bloggers who writes The Cranky Flyer, was at a travel industry conference last November when a United executive gave a talk titled Customer Experience in Flying, Not an Oxymoron. The executive gave sort of the usual blather about wanting to be best in class in service, and I guess somebody in the audience asked him what class United was trying to match up against. I mean, Singapore Airlines, Virgin Atlantic. No, said the executive, they were only looking at North American carriers. And he said, for us to say we want to be as good as a foreign flag carrier, well, that's overstretching a bit. And as Brett wrote, so they want to be the best of the worst, I guess. You know, I had a little taste of this back in December, settling for mediocre to save some money. I talked in the last episode, episode number 70, about this crazy one-day out-and-back trip to London I had to make. If you want to hear the gory details, flip back and listen to episode number 70. Now, I normally would have flown business class, but since the client that I was going to see in London is a nonprofit that focuses on improving child's lives in developing countries, I just couldn't conscience the $5,000 premium over coach and instead burned one of my own upgrades. So I land in Heathrow at 6 a.m. and I trundle over to the United Arrivals Lounge to take a shower and change my clothes before my 10:30 a.m. meeting. I'm sorry, the woman said at the desk. You can't use the lounge with an upgraded ticket. It's only for full fare business and first class passengers. Well, there's a nice cost-cutting move. I fly over 100,000 miles on United to earn these bleeding upgrades, but when I use one, I mean, United won't even spring for a shower. I ended up changing my clothes in the handicap toilet on the first floor. Yes, I felt like a premium United flyer. You know, I'll tell you, the duct tape, though, holding together these tatty skies really are the employees. Flying home from Denver that same week in December, indeed, it was the last leg of that wacky trip. I had actually managed to score an upgrade, got into first class, and had fallen asleep right as we took off. I mean, I sort of had vague memories of the plane rotating up off the runway. Well, I woke up someplace, I don't know, over Nebraska, Iowa. You know, at night you look down, they all look the same. But I found, sitting on the armrest, I found the pilot's business card next to me. And I flipped it over, and on the back of it, the pilot had written, Mr. Peacock, thank you for your loyalty to United! You are one of our very special customers, and it's wonderful to have you with us tonight! Happy holidays! You know, and this, from a guy who'd had his pension canceled by United, that sentiment and the effort to go out of his way to communicate it, that to me is best in class. Too bad the environment in which he's working has grown a bit shabby. Okay, that's it. That's the end of Travel Commons podcast number 71. I hope you all enjoyed this podcast, and I hope you decide to stay subscribed. The bridge music is from Magnatune.com, the We Are Not Evil label. The songs, Beneath the Skin by Jerry Berlangieri. There you go. I gotta choose artists with more Anglo-Saxon names. It's easier for me to pronounce. So Beneath the Skin by Jerry B, there you go. Hurt Me So I Can Walk Away by Michael Joy, and Bulletproof by Music Inside. As always, you'll find the links in the show notes. And remember, if you have a story, a thought, a comment, a gripe, the voice of the traveler, send them along, text or MP3 file to comments, COMMENTS at travelcommons.com, or post them on our website at travelcommons.com. Thanks to everyone who's taken the time to send in emails, audio files, and to post comments on the website. Thanks to everybody who sent me Twitter messages, tweets, I guess, the latest thing. You can follow me. I guess that's the appropriate terminology. You can follow me at M Peacock on Twitter. I can't promise you anything blindingly insightful, but I appreciate those who follow me and send me notes. And until we speak next time, thanks for stopping by the Travel Commons. Take care. Bye now.
Life is hell, strange bed in a lonely motel. But one thing needs my mind, the warm woman that I left behind. From California to Carolina, she calls me up and there's nothing finer.